And right now, I'm very happy to introduce our next guest, and that's Rainey Reitman. She's a steering committee member with the Bradley Manning Support Network. And Bradley Manning undergoing a Article 32 hearing, which we're going to hear more about from Ms. Reitman. But thank you so much for being here tonight, Rainey. Tell us a little bit about your organization, the Bradley Manning Support Network.
Thank you for having me. Our organization is a network of different organizations and people that have come together to support Private First Class Bradley Manning, who is the accused WikiLeaks whistleblower. Our organization is tasked with two major responsibilities, and the first one is raising money for his legal defense, which I believe we've raised well over $100,000 for that already. And we pay for his attorney and any outside counsel that is needed, for example, forensics examiners that they want to bring in. And then we are also working to educate the public about Bradley Manning and his situation and try to really inform the general public about why this issue matters so much to our democracy.
So you can bring our listeners up to speed on just, you know, in the week before Christmas, there was something called an Article 32 hearing. You can explain what that is and what took place at Fort Meade and the importance of that after Private First Class Bradley Manning has been in custody for some 18 months, a lot of that custody in solitary confinement.
Yes, you're right. There was a there was an Article 32 hearing, which is actually not the trial. I think a lot of people have been confused. They think this is the court-martial. But this was just an opportunity for an investigating officer, not a judge, to decide whether or not to recommend that Bradley Manning goes for a full court-martial. And at some point after he makes his report, the court-martial would come later, perhaps 6 months or 9 months from now. Generally, an Article 32 hearing is extremely quick. It might happen even the day you're arrested. It might take just a few minutes. Bradley Manning's Article 32 was quite different because it was a case of such importance. It lasted 7 days, and it was held in Fort Meade, Maryland, and the defense and the prosecution actually argued a great deal. They actually showed their hands and talked a lot about what the foundations of their arguments were going to be in the court-martial. So they have already finished up. They finished up last week. And the investigating officer is now creating his report and sending that along, and then the decision will be made whether or not Bradley Manning will face a full court-martial. The defense has argued strongly that the majority of the charges against him be dropped. Right now he's facing, if you put all the time he would face in prison altogether, it's some 150 years, and the death penalty is actually not technically off the table at this point, so it's a very serious circumstances he's facing.
Now, what were some of the troubling things about the hearing? I know that the defense and the support committee were unhappy that many of the defense witnesses that were called were denied by the court in this hearing.
Yeah, that was one of the most troubling things about this hearing, and it came up the very first day. The defense attorney, David Coombs, asked the investigating officer to recuse himself, to remove himself from the court, because he had already displayed things that indicated he would be biased and be unable to make an impartial judgment regarding Bradley Manning. And one of the factors of that was the fact that he had granted every single one of the prosecution's suggested witnesses, and he had only granted two of the, I believe, over 30 witnesses that the defense had suggested. And the prosecution, the government, they submitted just a blank list. They said, these are the ones we want, and the investigating officer said, sure, you got them all. The defense, on the other hand, actually prepared a detailed explanation of why each of these characters was so important to have on hand for the Article 32, and yet almost overwhelmingly they were rejected. So it really spoke to this concern that perhaps right out of the gate the investigating officer is tending to lead towards the prosecution side in this. And one other thing to note is that many of the witnesses are scattered around the country and around the globe. Some are in Germany, one was in Hawaii, and the defense really wanted those people to be there in the courtroom to give their testimony so that the defense would have an opportunity to cross-examine them in person. And with the exception of a few forensic examiners, that request was denied.
Randy, I wondered if you would discuss for us some of the issues that came up in the hearing, such as determining the harm caused to the U.S. government, the military, and other subjects of the leaked documents that Bradley Manning allegedly gave to WikiLeaks. Tell us about that.
Sure. The way the hearing sort of unfolded, the government, the prosecution, was basing its argument line basically around forensic analysis. They collected all these different computers that Bradley Manning had used at different times and then did forensic analysis on them to try and pinpoint data that indicated Manning had accessed documents that later came up on the WikiLeaks website. And the defense took a different tactic. The defense said, we are here not just to discuss what happened or how it happened, but to discuss why it happened and to talk about this larger issue of government transparency. One of the major focal points of the defense's argument is that there have been no negative repercussions to this information being published, and that what is being charged against Bradley Manning is an enormous overreaction, that he should not be facing 150 years in prison, 24-year-old guy, just trying to make this country a better place, for something that, in effect, did not have any negative impact on our soldiers overseas or on our negotiations in world spheres. So that was one of their core arguments. And I believe many of the witnesses that were denied were going to speak to that particular issue.
Randy Reitman is our guest. We're talking about the pretrial hearing in the U.S. military for Private First Class Bradley Manning, accused of leaking U.S. government documents to WikiLeaks. And Randy Reitman, tell us about the issue of psychological distress, because this seemed to have come up in the hearing. And what is the relationship to the trial that's coming up, the court-martial, and the state of mind that Bradley Manning was in during his time in the military as he's been accused of leaking these documents?
I was actually in the courtroom all for 5 days last week, and they had a number of witnesses come up and talk about Manning's psychological issues during his time in the military. They actually brought up Manning's roommate, who stayed with him when he was in Iraq, and his roommate admitted, you know, under oath, well, yes, it's true, we didn't talk at all. And when pushed, he said, well, it's because I found out early on that Manning was gay, and I told him after that I didn't want really to speak to him anymore. You know, right from the get-go, shut down, shut out, basically because of homophobia in the military. All of the witnesses that were brought up sort of spoke to the fact that he had no friends, he was made fun of, he was pushed away. And then a lot of the other witnesses talked about how he had repeatedly reached out to get help. He had written an email describing psychological problems that he was having and the stress he was under, and how much he needed to get help to his commanding officer. And his commanding officer had noted it and done nothing. Manning had been, according to the evidence that was presented, grappling with gender identity disorder. He was, and I, you know, I don't know all the details. It hasn't all come out yet, but it seems like he was considering whether or not to become a woman and whether or not that identity suited him more. He had, for example, purchased a book, allegedly purchased a book on feminine facial surgery and had it sent to his aunt's house in Potomac. And he had repeatedly reached out to his commanding officers to try and get help and get assistance. And they had rebuffed him sort of time and again. And the defense brought this up to show that the unit that Bradley Manning was working in was this lawless unit that did not provide for its soldiers, that did not give them decent training, that did not assist them in their times of need, that did not react for their clear and, you know, very outspoken need for assistance. So I want to kind of correct a misconception out there. There's this idea that, you know, well, does one's, you know, psychological concerns, does that excuse leaking? And that's actually not the argument that the defense is making. The defense is sort of positioning itself as, you know, the leaks that were alleged to have been Bradley Manning's were made by someone of conscience who was struggling with an ethical situation and made a choice based on their conscience. And the larger issue of the military failing to provide for Bradley Manning is more of evidence to speak to mitigating circumstances.
Okay, so it's not really a direct relationship between someone in psychological distress making an error and releasing these documents in a way that they may have reconsidered if he was in a different state of mind. What you're saying is that these stresses upon him were not addressed, and maybe that demonstrates that the military had not really trained Bradley Manning and the other people properly in handling exactly. classified documents?
Exactly. So that is one of the arguments. So what people need to remember is that Manning is not just up for one or two charges. He's facing, I think it's like two dozen charges right now. So I believe at this point, and again, I can't see into David Coombs's mind here, but having been in the courtroom and studied it, I believe a lot of the arguments for why Manning decided, or allegedly decided, to give this information to WikiLeaks in the particular manner that it happened was driven by moral conscience. And many of the other factors, as far as whether or not he was someone who should have had a security clearance, whether or not he had overstepped his classification roles, you know, whether or not he was allowed to have CDs in his workstation area. Those smaller charges are the ones that, in particular, I think they're trying to mitigate by talking about poor training, lawless environment, and a leadership that absolutely failed Manning. This trial has shown just how horrible it can be for transgender folk to be in our military. It is, the testimonies that were out there were just, they were incredibly concerning.
We're speaking tonight on Counterpoint with Rainey Reitman, a steering committee member of the group Bradley Manning Support Network, and we're talking about the recent Fort Meade Article 32 hearing that Private First Class Bradley Manning had undergone just this past week before Christmas. And Rainey, I wanted to discuss with you the allegation by the defense that there is an epidemic of overclassified U.S. government documents that in some way led somebody like Bradley Manning to release them, thinking that the public has a right to know many of the things that were divulged in the documents that WikiLeaks eventually did release to the public and the press. Tell us a bit about overclassification as an issue here.
Well, this has actually become a huge issue of public controversy. As you probably know, in 2010 alone, there were 77 million documents classified by our government. That's a 40% jump over the prior year. And the number of people with security clearances is around 4.2 million. That's more people than there are in the city of Los Angeles. the classification of documents has become the default in our military culture. There's this idea to constantly hide things away, but many of the things that are being so carefully classified are not only things that won't hurt or endanger our military work overseas, they also are attempts to cover up some very concerning situations that happen. So, for example, one of the leaks that has not come out yet, has yet to be published, but is attributed to Bradley Manning, is the Guarani airstrike, also known as the Granai massacre, in which there's an airstrike by U.S. military forces that killed, I think it was a total of about 120 people. I'm not sure on the total, but it was 90 school children. And this is along with the video collateral murder, which shows two Reuters journalists getting gunned down by Americans. Some of the things that Manning saw that led him to speak out and to leak documents. So there's this idea that there was no method, no mechanism in place whatsoever that someone like Bradley Manning would have had a way to get that information out other than leaking it, because there's no way to really unclassify documents for somebody like Bradley Manning, who saw something that was that disturbed his conscience.
Thank you for that summary of some of the issues in this this hearing. And I guess we could have covered this at the beginning, but this is an important point here, and that is, what kind of penalty do the charges that Bradley Manning faces? What is his possible jail sentence if he is convicted for these crimes? And I know the defense is concerned that the harshness of the sentence that he may be liable to get is in part a way to pressure him to cooperate with the prosecution to pursue a prosecution against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. You want to speak to that, please?
Yes, but I think you nailed it on the head. The defense and many of the analysts who've been watching this case believe that they are going after, that the government is pursuing Bradley Manning in this particularly harsh manner because they are hoping to get him to testify against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and also to make an example of him. The charges altogether, if Manning were to be convicted of all of them and get the highest sentence, would be some 150 years in prison. The death penalty is actually still on the table. The prosecution has stated that they aren't, at this point anyway, going to pursue the death penalty, though it's certainly possible that that's something that could be faced. The defense has asked that most of these charges be dropped, especially egregious ones like aiding the enemy, and that instead they face, you know, simple overstepping classification boundaries and something more to the tune of, maximum charge, 30 years. And so what we're waiting for now is for the investigating officer to review the information that was reported to him and decide if he's going to recommend that all of those charges go and to a grand to a court-martial, or whether they should be reduced before the court-martial.
Rainey, you were in the courtroom with Bradley Manning during the course of this hearing at Fort Meade. What was his demeanor like? I know that there has been a lot of concern by his supporters, as well as the United Nations rapporteur on human rights, that Bradley Manning was held in extremely harsh conditions, where he was under 24-hour surveillance. He was stripped of clothing at times and held in solitary confinement, sometimes 23 hours out of the day.
Yes, there is a lot of concern about that. In fact, Juan Mendez, the special rapporteur on torture for the UN, has still not been able to get a solitary visit with Bradley Manning. He's requested it repeatedly. And I believe Change.org is currently running a petition asking the government to grant him this unsupervised visit. The idea is that if Bradley Manning meets with the special rapporteur on torture, You want them to be able to speak freely. You want him to be able to say things that aren't going to be used against him in a courtroom. And that's the kind of meeting they want to have to find out whether or not Manning was tortured and find out exactly the conditions he was held in for 10 months while he was in solitary and, as you said, stripped of his clothing at night and forced to stand naked at attention. I fear we have only an inkling of what that was like for him. So this was last week when we saw him, the first time in 18 months that he had made a public appearance. And he was fairly quiet, other than when he answered a direct question from the investigating officer. He would say, like, "Yes, sir, I understand." He did not really engage with any of the supporters around him. If he had family members there, I didn't see them. You typically, in a proceeding like this, the defendant would be turning around and chatting with people, but in this case, he did not. And in fact, Daniel Ellsberg, who is the Pentagon Papers whistleblower, approached Bradley at one point and reached forward to put his hand on the back of his back. And two guards came up quite quickly and escorted Daniel Ellsberg out and told him he wasn't allowed to do that. Now, that's, this is their rule. It has nothing to do with a typical Article 32 hearing. You'd normally be allowed to talk to the defendant. It was during a break. So I wonder if he was not instructed for whatever reason to specifically not engage with the supporters that were there. He was moved in and out quite quickly, and he didn't really have a chance to speak. He leaned forward a few times, intently listening to what the various witnesses had to say. At one point, when Adrian Lamo, who's the individual who testified against him, he's the hacker who turned Bradley Manning in. At one point during that part of the testimony, Manning sat back in his chair and turned his hand up as if sort of in exasperation. But that was really one of the only signs of emotion that we got to see from Manning.
Well, Randy, we're almost out of time, but do leave our listeners with the web address for the Bradley Manning Support Network and maybe say a word or two about how listeners who are concerned about this case and want to support Bradley Manning, how they can do so.
Absolutely. So our website is bradleymanning.org, and we're also Save Bradley Manning on Facebook and Save Bradley on Twitter. Now, we are tasked with fundraising to make sure he gets a very good legal defense and that there's public education about his issues. So money can always help. But speaking out, having public events, having public rallies, writing op-eds to your local paper, all of these things can make a huge difference in the court of public opinion, which is where we're going to need to win this if we want to make sure that Bradley Manning doesn't spend the rest of his life in jail. And, the other thing is that we strongly believe that if Bradley Manning is going to see justice, it's going to happen because the press and the public are there in the courtroom when they're trying to charge him. And that means that we really need people to be there during the court-martial, either out on the street protesting in front or actually in the courtroom reporting on what happens. So I would urge people in the next 6 to 9 months, he should go back for his court-martial and to make it a point to be there. So those would be my pieces of advice.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this Monday right after the holiday, as well as all your important work with the Bradley Manning Support Network. And thanks for reporting to us on what happened there. And we'll certainly stay in touch with you over at the Bradley Manning Support Network to get an update and to also let our listeners know what's happening in terms of support projects, nationally and locally. So thank you for that, Rainey.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good night. That's Rainey Reitman, steering committee member with the Bradley Manning Support Network.